Welcome to Scuderia F1, the podcast that's always up to speed with the latest Formula One news. Follow us on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Daly and Kevin Laramie.
Hey everybody, what is up? Welcome back to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. I'm Mark Daly, I'm your host. It's Friday morning and we're here doing what we always do on this program, and that is talk Formula One. And it has been a bit of a weird time as I've been in the studio to get the show done for today. I came in, sat down, and I noticed that there was a bunch of Windows updates pending to install on my computer. So I thought, well, I know that this computer tends to run slow when it's downloading and installing. So I thought I'll just go and lie down, just chill on the couch for a little while. I did its thing. I completely fell asleep, and now I don't know where I am or what my name is. Thing is, I'm not a morning person, regardless what time I wake up, and naps included. But I'll persevere, I'll manage, and we'll get through this together. So I was just looking. Today is actually October 30th, 2020. My goodness, where's the time gone? We are now down to only 2 months left in 2020, and I, for one, cannot wait to see this year come to an end. Unfortunately, that doesn't mean that COVID and all that is necessarily going to go away at the turn of the new year on January 1st, but it's an opportunity to turn over a new leaf and start a fresh year, and hopefully 2021 goes better. Anyways, we're not here to talk about that. Well, actually, we kind of are. Before we get into the news itself for this week, some of the breaking news that came out this week and on Thursday, I will start with George Russell, the Williams driver. His personal trainer, Alex Casanovas, has been self-isolating since Thursday and will have a COVID test at Friday outside of the paddock in Imola, and must actually return a negative test before he can actually enter the facility. So he's been showing mild respiratory symptoms for COVID-19 in the last couple of days. Russell and Casanovas have actually not been in contact together since they were at Portimão in Portugal for the Grand Prix last weekend, and they haven't seen each other since race day. Both of them have actually produced negative COVID tests since then. Russell is going to have his COVID test today. He last had a test on Tuesday of this week. It was part of the entry requirements to get into Italy. That was negative, fortunately. Anyways, a spokesperson for Williams had to say, quote, "After displaying mild respiratory symptoms this morning, Williams can confirm that George Russell's performance coach is self-isolating today in line with FIA guidelines. A COVID-19 test collected yesterday was negative. However, he will undergo further precautionary test again tomorrow outside the paddock before taking further directions from the FIA. He has not been in contact with George since race day in Portugal. George undertook his scheduled COVID-19 test on Tuesday in order to enter Italy today, which also was confirmed as negative. He will be retested at the track on Friday as part of the team's regular testing schedule," end quote. Well, so far so good for George himself, has not returned a positive COVID test. However, their reserve driver, Jack Aitken, is going to be on site at the track starting today. And he's actually been at a number of races this year just to support the team. But we've seen that that reserve drivers have been needed. Obviously, we've seen with Nico Hülkenberg and Racing Point, he's filled in on several occasions this year. So the thing is, part of the FIA protocols, everyone that is going to be attending the Grand Prix, from the mechanics to support personnel to the drivers, they have to have a regular screening for COVID-19. They take a test every 5 days at the events, as well as one within 24 hours of arriving at the race venue. So in alignment with the FIA's COVID-19 protocols, that anyone who begins to suffer any COVID-type symptoms while they're outside of the venue has to immediately report to the nearest medical facility and get guidance from their team. And by this time, we all know that the list of potential COVID symptoms are pretty much like the symptoms we see at this time of year when we have cold and flu season anyways, and that includes fever, cough, shortness of breath, fatigue, headache, runny nose, sore throats, loss of sense of taste or smell. Yeah, the last couple, skin rash or discoloration of fingers of toes, that's a little bit different, but hopefully this is just a bit of a false alarm, and George's performance coach, Alex Casanovas, is just having a mild illness, not COVID-related, and we don't see that come up again. Unfortunately, we probably will. Also, when it comes to the race this weekend at Imola, it's actually going to be run behind closed doors after all. They've been given permission about a month ago to sell up to 13,000 tickets and basically operate a VIP hospitality booth for local sponsors and guests and all these different things. This week, there was a decree, an order that was put out by Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte's office, ordering a bunch of new COVID-19 measures. So it includes new restrictions on crowds at events and more of the general type things, such as closure of restaurants and cafes across Italy from 6 p.m., et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Anyways, unfortunately, it's not going to be like we've seen in the last couple of races where there have been fans in attendance. But it's interesting, they actually hadn't sold all of the 13,000 tickets that were available. However, the race promoters were actually expecting maybe a bit of a run in the days coming up to the event, because they felt like a lot of people were just sitting back and watching because of a case of a cancellation of the race itself, or maybe because of some introduction of crowd restrictions, which actually is panned out to be true. So a bit disappointing, but unfortunately, it's just the way things are right now. Okay, well, moving ahead now, the Formula One teams, all 10 of them, have actually agreed in principle to a $30 million driver salary cap that's going to start in 2023. So the numbers have actually not been finalized. This is just something that's been thrown out there as part of a provisional plan. So it's going to be $30 million for the both drivers combined. So you could split it to a 20 and 10, 15 and 15, 1 and 29. Or whatever it might be. So they also have plans to actually put a cap on the combined salaries of the top three employees in the team, which is usually the technical director, the team principal, whatever. You know, there's those sorts of people, those sorts of titles. So it's part of this ongoing theme or effort that we've seen in Formula One over the past several months to really curb the spending and tighten it up. Because, I mean, they're going to be in uncertain times, as we all are, as we deal with the economic repercussions of the global pandemic. And they really feel that income streams in the sport are going to be affected for a number of years to come. So what we do know is the $145 million budget cap that's coming in next year, and that's going to be on a decreasing scale for the next couple of years thereafter. And the driver salaries and the top employees cap, that's a bit of a, well, that's not going to be included in the budget cap for next year. But the teams have accepted that there actually should be some restrictions on that. So they discussed it and voted at it at a meeting of the F1 commission on Monday. And it was actually backed by all the team principals from the 10 Formula One teams. So the details, of course, will have to be agreed upon before it actually gets ratified eventually by the World Motorsport Council. So anyways, interesting to see that these sort of things are still ongoing. And I think it's actually a very responsible thing to do. And I really think it's, as I said a couple of times on the show, since we've seen these measures be discussed and introduced in Formula One, I think it really shows a new era of fiscal and financial responsibility in Formula One. And I think it's a good idea. I mean, I like the, from a couple of different things. I mean, of course, Formula One is glitzy and glamorous, and there's a lot of money being spent. And, you know, that's part of the mystique, part of the allure. But I don't think when it comes to spending on cars and development and all that for the teams, I don't think there should be unlimited budgets. I think that, I'm hoping that this new budget cap will promote some sort of parity within the sport that will close the gaps in performance between the haves and the have-nots. Of course, you can have all the money in the world or not. It really comes down to how wisely you spend it and what you do with it to really make it effective. So, of course, if you have a lot of money, I mean, you can do more things with it. But certainly, I think the teams that are able to be a little bit more flexible, that are able to do more maybe with less, those are the teams that that are going to be the ones to look for. Anyways, moving along to the next item, and we're kind of sticking with these sort of behind the scenes things. The Formula One is looking at a 23 race season for 2021, which is pretty cool. I mean, obviously, we are all disappointed we didn't get the full 22 races we'd been hoping for this year. Of course, the pandemic screwed all of that up, and fortunately, we came back with a 17 race season, which I still think is an amazing compromise and rescue of the season. But I'm surprised that they've already gone ahead and planned the schedule for next year, which of course they have to. But still, with all the uncertainty, they're still looking at a 23 race season, and they have said in the past that they actually think that they could run up to 25 races for an entire Formula One season, which is a lot of races. I mean, you basically think we're racing for half of the weekends out of the year. I mean, 52 weeks in a year, 25 races. I mean, it's great for people like us that love Formula One. We love to sit down as many weekends out of the year to watch our favorite sport, but it certainly would put a lot of strain on the teams. And that's why I thought that number of 23 for 2021 was quite surprising, considering all the uncertainty and all the things going on around the world. But as we've seen, I mean, the FIA has put a pretty effective COVID protocols into the Formula One bubble. I mean, obviously, it has not been without challenges. They knew that was going to happen, but it seems that the issues that we've seen when Perez tested positive, and then the fallout from Stroll testing positive, and some of the personnel at Mercedes, it seems to have worked, and that's why I think it's pretty impressive to get where we are since we started at the beginning of July in Austria to where we are right now, back in Europe at in Imola, to get as far as we are in the season, I think is really, really impressive. But still, it is interesting that they are pushing ahead with such a large schedule despite all the uncertainty. So we're looking at a scheduled start in Australia on the 21st of March, followed by Bahrain, which is pretty usual. Then we'd have a gap to the Chinese Grand Prix at the second weekend in April, and then finally we'll get to the Vietnamese Grand Prix in Hanoi, which was sadly one of the races that was canceled this year. It was set for a very early time slot, and then as everything started to fall apart in the middle of March, it was promptly canceled. So one of the big changes for next year will be the movement of the Dutch Grand Prix at Zandvoort, which was going to be held, I believe it was in May of this year. Anyways, that was one of the races that was canceled. Jan Lammers, who's in charge of that the Dutch Grand Prix, and as one of the bosses at Zandvoort, they said that they'd actually rather postpone or cancel it and then postpone it to a day somewhere farther off in the future where they could have the people in attendance. Of course, having all the passionate Dutch fans at Zandvoort with Max Verstappen would be a wonderful thing, fantastic atmosphere at the track. So anyways, the big thing is that 2023, they're looking to move the Dutch Grand Prix into the autumn. So here we go. Interesting that it should turn out that way. So we'll see how this gets hashed out over the next over the weeks and months, but 23 races for 2021 seems a very ambitious schedule. So one of the proposed additions is a race that will be held in Saudi Arabia. Of course, that's causing a little bit of a controversy, and Amnesty International has warned of what they've called sports washing if Formula One actually has a race in Saudi Arabia, basically overlooking, I guess, the human human rights problems that they have there. And they are hoping to get a street race in the city of Jeddah, which is, like I said, it's on the provisional schedule that was given out to the team bosses at the F1 commission meeting of Monday this week. So that is a problematic in many ways. And Amnesty is they've really campaigned against human rights violations in Saudi Arabia, and they made that link that Saudi Arabia has to support. So we'll see. It sounds like Formula One wants to do this, but who knows how it turns out, especially if there are other implications, other things to look at. Okay, so we're going to look at, before we do that, we're coming up on a break here, so I'm just going to hold off on the next story. But before we do that, I want to talk to you guys once more about MyBookie, because between the NFL, college ball, Major League Baseball, if it's still on, I mean, of course, the Dodgers won it all just a couple of days ago, there's still no shortage of games to watch. And with thousands of lines available on all your favorite sports and events, you can turn your game day into payday with MyBookie. So if you're the type of guy who likes to back the big favorites, consider putting a couple in a parlay for a much bigger payout. Not only do parlays make meaningless games exciting, but more importantly, they give you the chance to turn ordinary bets into a real moneymaker. And don't forget the underdogs. They have a ton of value. The thing about the NFL is that underdogs are never really dogs on Sunday, and every team truly has a chance to win, and you do too. Game spreads, championship futures, and player prop bets. It's never too late to get in on the action and start turning your sports knowledge into actual cash in your wallet. So sign up at MyBookie, and when you do, use my special promo code OVERTIME to claim a deposit match dollar for dollar all the way up to $1,000. It's a special bonus designed to give you a little help and a head start on your winning season. That's promo code OVERTIME for you to claim your bonus when you make your first deposit. Stacked UFC cards, presidential prop bets, all the major sports and more. Sign up today to begin your winning season exclusively at MyBookie. All right, well, welcome back to the show, and let's take a look at what else is in the Formula One world this week. And we haven't talked very often about Racing Point in the last little while, but Mercedes is actually going to become the second largest shareholder in Aston Martin, and this is in parallel with an increased level of technical cooperation between the two car marks. And this is really, really interesting. I mean, despite all the things that have been happening around the world with COVID and everything like that, and the financial and economic repercussions, we still saw earlier this year that Lawrence Stroll and his consortium went in and invested mega bucks into Aston Martin. And of course, they've also been behind Racing Point, which is going to become the Aston Martin works team next year. I mean, they've been involved in that for a couple of years, so it's really been a long time coming, and just a part of a bigger move. And it is really, really interesting to see that. So Mercedes is actually going to increase their stake in the company up to 20%, and also provide what Aston Martin is calling an access to a range of world-class technologies, including powertrain architecture for conventional hybrid and electric vehicles, and future-oriented electronic architecture for all product launches through 2027. So that's very, very interesting to hear. Of course, there's been a sort of a Mercedes link already, and that's with Toto Wolff, who's already a shareholder of Aston, but he's doing so on his own personal private side. So Lawrence Stroll, who is also Aston's owner and executive chairman, was also very poignant in stating that the significance of the extended cooperation with Mercedes. Anyways, Stroll had to say, quote, "This is a transformational moment for Aston Martin. It is the result of 6 months of enormous effort to position the company for success to capture the huge and exciting opportunity ahead of us. I'm extremely pleased with the progress to date, and that we are ahead of plan on timing despite operating in these most challenging of times. Today, we take another major step forward as our long-term partnership with Mercedes-Benz AG moves to another level, with them becoming one of the company's largest shareholders. Through this new expanded agreement, we secure access to world-class technologies to support our long-term product expansion plans, including electric and hybrid powertrains, and the partnership underpins our confidence in the future, end quote. So, like I say, I mean, it is very, very interesting to hear that such major things are happening in the motorsports worlds, in the automotive world, despite all the uncertainty. Now, sticking with Racing Point and with the Stroll family, Toto Wolff, the Mercedes team principal, says that Lance, who is the son of Lawrence and, of course, Racing Point driver, as was previously with Williams. Anyways, Toto believes that he thinks that Lance faces a bit of unfair, what he calls a stigma, because of Lawrence's wealth, and he feels that Lance is 100% deserving of his place in Formula One. And, you know, I think, unfortunately, that this is just one of these things that's always going to be thrown out there, that, you know, he's the rich spoiled kid, that, you know, daddy helped him get into Formula One and has paid his way. And, well, yeah, I mean, there is an element of truth to that. Of course, you know, the Strolls are very wealthy. Lance obviously has had more access and financial support to this sort of thing than a lot of other people, us normal people. But still, we have to remember that that despite his dad throwing all that money and helping him out in his career, whatever the cost was, he had to have some sort of talent. I mean, you just can't throw all that money out and expect that you're going to rise all the way to the top in Formula One just because somebody's writing big checks for you. So, I mean, there is an element of that. But, I mean, let's not forget, Lance was also very successful in all the other formula that he's raced in. And I think that, you know, it's these things are just only going to be made from time to time. Anyways, Toto had to say, quote, name me one driver this season that is not there on merit. Let's look at Lance, and I'm not biased here because I agree it should be a meritocracy. He won the Italian F4 Championship, won the International F3 Championship, has been on the podium twice, and is qualified for the first row in Monza in the rain. I don't think we can say just because his father's a billionaire that he's not here on merit. I think he's actually suffering from the stigma, and that is just not right. He can't do anything for his father being very successful in his own right. It's even more impressive that a kid with that environment chooses the most competitive or one of the most competitive sports in the world. Honestly, there is no discussion. End quote. So, yeah, I think that that is a good take that that Toto has made. I mean, like I said, Lance has been very successful in junior formulas, and you know, would like to see him do better in Formula One, honestly. But I mean, he came into the sport fairly young. And I mean, there are a lot of young drivers in Formula One, obviously, in this time. I mean, there's been a real switch towards, you know, a youth movement over the past couple of years. And we've definitely seen his potential and his talent from time to time. We have to remember, too, when he was at Racing Point at the beginning, he was very much in a car that was designed for someone else. And I mean, he's hit a bit of a bad patch the past couple of races. I mean, he was sick after Russia. He missed, you know, missed a race in between, you know, the Eiffel Grand Prix and all that. But I mean, it's just difficult. I mean, he's had some mechanical issues. He had a crash in Mugello, so he just needs to work through that. And I mean, we've seen his potential from time to time, although Lando Norris might disagree with that. Anyways, moving on to the next story, James Allison, who's the technical director to Mercedes-AMG Formula One, says getting the tires, what he calls singing, is the biggest challenge whenever Formula One goes to a new and unknown racetrack this year. Anyways, he conceded that the start of the Portuguese Grand Prix was what he called very dicey for both Lewis Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas, even though it really worked out for them in the end, coming home 1-2. James had to say, quote, going to a new track increases the workload and it adds a layer of uncertainty to us because we don't have a long checklist of all the things that might have gone wrong at that track in the past, and we don't have a detailed knowledge of the way in which the car is going to behave, but we still have pretty good simulation tools. As long as we know what the asphalt looks like, how rough it is, and the layout of the curbs and the racing line, we can get a pretty good estimate of of what we need to go quickly at that track. And like any track, really, a new circuit or one we are very used to, the biggest challenge, the biggest thing that makes a difference to whether it is a good weekend or a bad weekend is whether or not we can get the tires really singing for us. If we can get them working happily within their working range, the front and rear axle, and the car nicely balanced, then we are going to have a good weekend, end quote. So, well, an interesting admission from Allison there. And honestly, I mean, they've had more good weekends than bad weekends at, this season. I mean, I think obviously the two problematic seasons or races that they have were at Silverstone in the summer when for the 70th anniversary and for the British Grand Prix. But that was an interesting one. I mean, that was the heat, obviously, that was causing the issues in those races. I mean, we had the punctures and then they had graining the weekend thereafter for the 70th anniversary Grand Prix, but that is a little bit counter to what James was saying, because he was saying that the challenges seem to be coming more from the tracks that they don't have a lot of data on, say your Portimaos, your Mugellos, and places like that they haven't been to for a very long time or completely brand new to Formula One, because they came in as part of these brand new and fill-in events, replacement events for the races that were canceled. So that is interesting, but the thing is that we have seen that they have issues, and despite them saying that that the W11 is the best cart that they've built and designed and built to date, that it's not without its challenges. But whenever they get that car dialed in right, I mean, boy, is it ever good. Anyways, moving over to Mercedes' one-time rivals, Ferrari, Matteo Binotto, the team principal, said that they have to prove the progress that they've seen over the past couple of races is not just track specific. So Binotto said they have to validate these improvements that they've seen in the SF1000's performance to really make sure that it's due to the actual, or not due to the characteristics of tracks like Portimao, and it's just sort of a bit of a flash in the pan. And I mean, the SF1000 has just been a real problem for them. And I mean, they've also had issues with the power unit, so it's really been across the board. Anyways, Binotto denied that there was what he called a day and night difference in the car's performance compared to Mugello a couple of weeks previously, and he said he was encouraged by the progress that they've made since then, and he really wanted to see how the car performs at other tracks before he really makes a firm judgment and really comments concretely on it. Anyways, Mattia did say, quote, the car is slightly improved, but it's not completely a different picture. When I think that the battle is so close in the midfield, a couple of tenths may help by staying behind or being ahead. I think in the race, our race pace in Mugello was very poor compared to quali. I see in Portugal the race pace has been better, but there are many reasons for it, and not only the car upgrades, but I think it'll be more important for us anyways in the next races to prove that the updates are bringing us some performance that we've seen here, or if it's only specific to Portimao. So yeah, I mean, they've certainly had their issues this year, and there is no doubt that the car has been a little bit better. I mean, Charles, for example, I mean, he qualified fourth at the Portuguese Grand Prix last week and finished in fourth. And he's had some decent-ish results in recent times. But still, I mean, regardless, they're still a long ways off where they want and where they need to be. Anyways, sticking with Ferrari, we're going to talk now about their sister team, and that's Alfa Romeo. And Alfa and Sauber have decided to extend the naming deal that they have together for at least another year into 2021. And that has only just been confirmed late this week. So they actually got together for the first time in 2018 when it was under, Sauber Alfa Romeo. Last year was the first full year as Alfa. Alpha again for this year, and it's good to see. I mean, it's a good mark to see in Formula One, and it is good that they're going to be staying in at least name wise for at least one more year. Team principal Fred Vasseur had to say, quote, "The extension of our relationship with Alfa Romeo is a true statement of intent from both parties. In Sauber, Alfa Romeo found a committed performance driven partner to which they could entrust their brand. We are honored to carry the heritage and past success of Alfa Alfa Romeo in our name. Both parties always intended for this relationship to bear fruit in the long term. We have laid some solid foundations in the last three seasons, and we aim to reap the rewards of this work in 2021 and beyond. End quote. So we'll wait and see. I mean, this year they seem to be struggling a little bit, but I don't think that's entirely all on them. I mean, you just look at the issues that Ferrari are having, and also Haas. All the Ferrari powered cars clearly are at a disadvantage to all the other teams that are either running Mercedes or Renault power or Honda. I mean, there's four engine manufacturers in Formula One at the moment. And clearly, out of the four engines available, the Ferrari has some issues compared to the others. Anyways, let's talk now about Renault. They are still around, and what they called strange Portugal form will help them understand a bit of a step back. So both Esteban Ocon and Daniel Ricciardo think what they called strange things they encountered in Portugal will help them get to the bottom of some of the challenges that they had. I mean, they'd had some pretty good results before that. Obviously, at the Eiffel Grand Prix at the Nürburgring, Danny Ricciardo got them their first podium in a very long time. I mean, they've been several years back in Formula One since they took over Lotus, but it's been a long climb to get back up to where they'd actually be in that position to fight for a place on the podium. And it's certainly been a long time coming. So it was disappointing to see that they weren't quite as pacey in Portugal as they had been over the past several races. I think Ocon and Ricciardo, what did they come back, or where did they finish in Portugal? I think it was like seventh or eighth off the top of my head. So disappointing to see them stumble backwards. So obviously a little bit of work to do, and hopefully they get that sorted out. Anyways, time for a quick break here on the Overtime Media Network. Don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
All right, well, welcome back to the show. And sticking with some of the midfield teams, AlphaTauri has confirmed this week that they are going to retain Pierre Gasly for 2021. Pierre's been having a really, really solid year this year. I mean, he won the Italian Grand Prix at Monza a couple of months ago, and he's been a solid performer all year long. I mean, he's been doing some very, very good things in that AlphaTauri all year, and I think this is a good story for a guy that I mean, 1 year, like a single year, is maybe not a complete indicator of where a young driver's career is going to go. However, last year was not a great year for Pierre. I mean, he'd been pretty good at Toro Rosso the year before, and then getting moved up to Red Bull for 2019, and then unfortunately it didn't really work out through the first half of the year, and then found himself returned to Toro Rosso after the summer break, and then it's taken some time, I think, for him to kind of like settle back in and really find his mojo again. But it's a good story that, especially this year, to see that Gasly's been doing so well. Anyways, Pierre himself had to say, quote, "I'm extremely happy to continue with Scuderia AlphaTauri for another season. This year is going very well, and we are on track to have our most successful season in the team's history. I feel we have a very strong relationship. We have managed to take every opportunity that has come our way, the best one at the Italian Grand Prix. Winning my first Formula One race in Monza was a very special moment for me. It was made extra sweet to deliver the second win in the team's history, so I'm very proud of that. I'll do my maximum to push the team and take all my responsibility to bring it as far forward as I can," end quote. So yeah, like I say, good to see Pierre sticking in Formula One, and obviously with AlphaTauri, there seems to be a good fit for the pair of them. So Red Bull team principal Christian Horner says that Pierre Gasly is actually not or wasn't under consideration for the second seat at Red Bull along Max Verstappen. Gasly's replacement at Red Bull, Alex Albon, although he had a very good half season there last year, has struggled throughout this year to really really get in his groove and do something. I mean, he's just not close in terms of pace to his teammate Max Verstappen, is not really helping the team the way that he should and the constructors by scoring the maximum amount of points that they feel he should be capable of. Anyways, Horner believes that Pierre Gasly is really doing well in the environment at AlphaTauri with less pressure than he would have at Red Bull. And he also feels that the AlphaTauri is a car that is not quite as complicated and tricky to drive as the Red Bull itself. Horner had the following to say, quote, "Obviously, we have a lot of information on the drivers over a big period of time. So Pierre has done a super job. He's driving very well in an environment with AlphaTauri. He's comfortable in that car and perhaps with less pressure that goes with that environment as well and less expectation. I think that obviously their aspirations as a team are different as it was as Toro Rosso. So it makes sense that the fit works well in both directions with Pierre and the AlphaTauri team," end quote. Horner actually feels that Gasly he might not be able to do a better job than Alex Albon. He had to say, quote, "Our first and foremost priority is just to give Alex the opportunity to lay claim to that seat. Let's not forget when he jumped in the car last year, he outscored and outperformed Pierre significantly in the balance of 2019. So if we were to swap them back, would it be any difference?" End quote. And yeah, I think that's a great point that Horner's making. He's also said in the last couple of weeks that if they do decide to replace Alex Albon, that they're going to look outside of the Red Bull system. And there are a number of good drivers out there available. Nico Hülkenberg's available. Sergio Perez available. Then you have guys like Roman Grosjean, Kevin Haas Kevin Magnussen that were let go by Haas last week. So there are options out there. I mean, I think that the two names that would pop up immediately, I think, would be Hülkenberg and Perez. They might be a good fit in that car. Anyways, Gasly's teammate Danny Kvyat said he's not worried about his future at AlphaTauri, even though that it might look that his chances of staying with the team or holding on that seat might be somewhat maybe evaporating a little bit. Anyways, Kvyat had to say, quote, "Honestly, I'm not at all worried. Whatever, if I'm going to be an F1 next year, it's good. If not, then so be it. I'm completely at the moment not thinking about this. It's not my priority right now. I can afford a year off or anything I want. So we will see. I still don't know exactly what it's going to be. I'm going to do my best the last few races remaining. It's always the best thing to do to fully focus on that. And then we will see what the future will bring. Of course, I'm aware that anything can happen," end quote. So there you go. Again, I guess it depends who they want to get in that car. If they've got other drivers in the system that they feel that should be there, And we'll see whether or not Danny Kvyat sticks with AlphaTauri for 2021. Now, moving back to Williams and George Russell, who we talked about at the top of the show, he feels that the Sergio Perez camp or his organization, his retainers, his peeps, have been spreading a bit of fake news out there, basically saying that George is going to be the guy that's going to see him thrown out the front door of Williams at the end of this year. Anyways, Russell does have a contract to drive for Williams for next year, but the rumor that's been out there for the last week or so is that perhaps his seat isn't as safe as he thinks it is as Williams, and Perez is actually a favorite to take that seat over. And I mean, Russell has done pretty good this year. I mean, he's gotten clearly not a very fast or competitive car into Q2 a number of times. He's come very close to scoring some points, which I think is a great thing for a team like Williams, who are not going to do that very often. So I think it's interesting that it's being thrown out there that he's going to be replaced. So anyways, George had to say, quote, "I think all this speculation is probably being fed by the Perez camp, who are trying to apply pressure on the other teams further down the grid, potentially for a Red Bull seat. That's my view on it. I've got a contract. I've got nothing to worry about, and I'm just here focusing on my job," end quote. So that's interesting that perhaps he thinks it's a bit of propaganda by Sergio Perez's management team to maybe make it sound like there's desire for him to go somewhere else, but specifically to maybe force Red Bull to play their hand a little bit or make a move. I don't know so much about that. I mean, I can see why, but if he's kind of on the fringe anyways, he's trying to leverage a seat at Red Bull by saying that Williams want them or wants him to go and drive for them next year. I'm sure if he's not really under consideration for Red Bull, then they'd be just like, okay, well, fine. We're not going to give you a drive for next year anyway. So if Williams are offering you a seat, then go for it. So, I mean, they could always call his bluff as well. Anyways, Toto Wolff, the Mercedes team principal. Let's not forget that Russell is a Mercedes driver. He's come through that system. He feels that Williams' decision, whatever it is, to keep him or replace him with Sergio Perez for next year is not due to Russell's performance what he's done at Williams over the past couple of years. And it's what he calls a political and a commercial decision. Anyways, what Toto had specifically to say was, quote, "George has proven that he deserves to be in Formula One. Today, again, he was running solid in the midfield. I don't think the decision comes down to his driving skills. It's probably an overall political decision and a commercial decision. It's up to the owner of Williams to decide where they want to help with the team. We have good respect of the independence of Williams and their decision-making progress. I think he is in a good position," end quote. So we'll see what happens, whether or not he sticks. Toto did say that if George does lose his race seat at Williams for 2021, he would be put through what he calls a mega testing program with Mercedes next year. He would revert back to being their reserve driver, but he still thinks that George, he's very confident that he's going to be in Formula One next year. Anyways, I just mentioned a little while ago, one of the guys that is available for next year is Kevin Magnussen, the Haas driver. Haas team principal Gunther Steiner believes that Kevin Magnussen is absolutely deserving of a seat in Formula One next year. So he's had he's butted heads with his teammate Romain Grosjean, throughout the years. During their time together, they did butt heads again last week at the Portuguese Grand Prix, despite the fact that they were way down there, finishing 16th and 17th. But it was made known a couple of weeks ago that they weren't going to be brought back for next year. And I mean, they'd been saying that for a little while that they had up to 10 guys that they were looking at for 2021. And they said that maybe one or both of those guys would be brought back for next year. And ultimately, they decided apparently some time ago that neither Magnussen or Grosjean would be coming back to Haas for next year. Anyways, Gunther had to say, I mean, I think he's good enough. Just at the moment, it's tough to find a seat, but he has shown over the last 4 years and with us and before that he has the talent. He just needs to find somewhere. He's matured a lot, I would say. I'm very complimentary of that towards him. The first 2 years, I think he still had what you call the symptoms, the post of being fired twice from a team. He always has a bit on edge, but has calmed down a lot. He's much more mature, and it also comes with age that you become more much more mature. But the as a race car driver, he's much more calm, and if there is something wrong, he doesn't fall out of balance, end quote. So, yeah, we'll wait and see. I mean, there's obviously not too many race seats left for 2021. So, we'll have to keep an eye out and see what happens to Kevin Magnussen. I mean, his teammate, Romain Grosjean, he was saying last week that he feels that he's got plenty of options outside of Formula One if it doesn't pan out with a new race drive within F1 next year. Anyways, moving away from the silly season stuff. Now, Lando Norris has apologized for some of the comments he made about Lewis Hamilton after the Portuguese Grand Prix last week, which Lewis won, which was his 92nd career Grand Prix victory, which now moves him undisputedly into the all-time lead. After winning the Eiffel Grand Prix, he was tied on 91 wins with Michael Schumacher, and now he is the sole record holder. So basically, George was just kind of like, whatever. That's basically it's, you know, the way that it came across after the Portuguese Grand Prix last week. Anyways, George actually did make a statement. He tweeted it out, which is so very, well, I guess Twitter isn't very 2020, but certainly is a thing that people do nowadays. Anyways, Lando had to say, quote, I owe an apology. I've been stupid and careless with some of the things I've said lately in media and interviews. I haven't shown the respect I should have to certain people. I'm not that kind of person, so I know I should apologize to them, but also reading and listening. Sorry, end quote. So there you go. So basically, Lando... I just really didn't pay respect to the fact that Lewis had made that record-breaking win and moved further ahead in there. He had to say, quote, I'm just happy for him, nothing more. It doesn't mean anything to me, really. He's in a car which should win every race, basically. He has to beat just one or two other drivers. That's it. Fair play to him. He's still doing the job he has to do, end quote. So, yeah, I mean, regardless if he has the best car or not, I mean, he still has to go out there and race like everybody else. It's just that he's got better equipment to do so. I mean, the fact is that Lewis is the best driver and the best car, and you get a combination of like Lewis Hamilton and Mercedes. I mean, obviously, good things are going to happen, and we've seen that demonstrated. So, I mean, it comes off of a bit off the cuff, a little bit kind of, it does come off disrespectful. So, I like Lando Norris. I think he's obviously, he's a good driver. So I'm glad that he stood up and, made the admission and said the right thing. Anyways, Toto Wolff says that he knows what the big difference in Hamilton's approach this year that has really given him an extra edge in 2020. I mean, as if he doesn't, have enough of an edge on things as it is. He believes it's down to what he calls an evolution into Lewis's approach to race weekends this year. Anyways, Toto Wolff had to say, quote, 92 race wins. Who would have thought that when we embarked on this project in 2013? It's almost a surreal amount of wins. It's his absolute passion, energy, everything that he puts into the sport and the talent, the ability. He's just standing out. End quote. So, yeah, that is very, very true. Toto did go on to say, quote, I think it's almost what I've seen this year for the first time. It's that he ramps up his weekend. There's a lot of reflection, a lot of learning, understanding the tires for the race. And yeah, he's just sitting comfortable. And I believe at the beginning in Portugal, and once the first laps were done, he just ramped it up. And then he had an unbelievable pace, end quote. Yeah, he absolutely did. When Lewis got into the groove, when he was really comfortable, he just was absolutely flying. I mean, mean, it was just unmatchable. Anyways, there's still some speculation as to what you know might happen with Lewis. He hasn't actually negotiated a new contract with Mercedes. I mean, if Lewis is going to come back after this year, I mean, he's going to do so pretty much in his own terms. I mean, they're going to have to write him a big check to do so, and I think that that Toto obviously recognizes that. And there's a bit of a humorous quote, and when he was asked how they're going to pay for Lewis's big payday after you know all the records that he's broken, and I mean, he's going to be win that seventh world title this year. I mean, he's going to tie Schumacher, and then if he wins it next year, I mean, we truly are in uncharted territory. Anyways, when asked about the details of a new contract with Lewis, he had to say, quote, "It's huge. We have to sell plenty of inventory, sell a lease back of the buildings, and just come up with the money," end quote. So bit of a funny quote there. Glad to see that that Toto has a good sense of humor. Anyways, time for one final break here on the Overtime Media Network. Don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, well, welcome back to the show. On time to start shutting it down and start to shut off the lights slowly one by one. Of course, this weekend we are going back to Imola, the Autodromo Internazionale, Enzo e Dino Ferrari. I apologize to my Italian friends for butchering your language so badly. But yes, the San Marino Grand Prix goes at Imola this week. It was cool to see it a month or so ago, the World Cycling Championships, that they used part of the track for the road race portion. It was really, really cool to see. Anyways, great to get back there with Formula One. First time since 2006. First time that we saw the San Marino Grand Prix goes all the way back to 1981. So, I mean, they had a really, really long run, but I mean, it's been almost 15 years since we've been there. Michael Schumacher holds the record with 7 victories at Imola. The most wins by a constructor are Williams and Ferrari, who both have 8 wins apiece. The circuit is just under 5 kilometers in length. It's just under 3.1 miles. A total race distance of 307.2 kilometers or 191.02 miles. It's going to be a 62-lap race. The last time that they were there in 2006, so I think we're almost guaranteed we're going to see lap records and all that set this weekend. Anyways, the pole position was set by Michael Schumacher that year. Pole time was 122.795. The fastest lap of the race was set by Fernando Alonso in the Renault, and Fernando's fastest lap was 124.569. The podium back in 2006 was an interesting one. Michael Schumacher in the Ferrari, Fernando Alonso in the Renault, and Juan Pablo Montoya in the McLaren Mercedes. So those were your top three drivers on the podium that year. And of course, it's got a bit of a dark history, that track. I mean, if you go back to 1994 and the tragic events that we saw that race weekend, when we saw Roland Ratzenberger killed during qualifying and Ayrton Senna killed during the race, was really the saddest of circumstances. You know, there was a number of years ago, and I've got the DVD upstairs, so I mean, that just goes to prove how long this one's been out. But that documentary Senna that came out, it's been on Netflix. You've been able to stream it in other places subsequently. I mean, absolutely fantastic documentary film about the life and times of Ayrton Senna. But I've never been able to watch the whole thing. I remember watching that live, and I just remember remember just the bad vibe that we had to begin with after, you know, Ratzenberger was killed on the Saturday, and then just watching the race itself and the incident at Tamburello, where then where Senna had his accident. And it really left a mark. I've never been able to go back and watch that that movie. I get to the part where it gets to Imola, and I've just never been able to push through and watch the whole thing. But anyways, hoping for a good race, a safe race on Sunday. I was looking at the weather report a little bit earlier for the forecast on Sunday. So if you look at about early to mid afternoon, we're looking at about 65 degrees Fahrenheit or about 18 degrees centigrade. Looking at fairly gentle winds of about 5 miles per hour, or 8 kilometers an hour. Not a lot. Although last week I thought it was interesting at Portimao, the drivers were talking about the strong winds, and on the graphic on the television feed said that the wind was coming from the north northeast at about 11 kilometers or about 6.5 miles per hour. And I thought, well, that doesn't really seem like, I mean, it's not like 60 miles an hour, 100 kilometer an hour winds, I mean, 6.5 miles an hour, 11 kilometers an hour, whatever it is, it seems to me to be a bit of a gentle breeze. But I guess these cars are just really that sensitive. So there's a very little chance of a precipitation forecast calling for 10% chance of rain on Sunday. And a relative humidity of 81 degrees. So we'll wait and see how it turns out. And as always, how can you really bet against Lewis Hamilton and Mercedes this week? Don't really need to go down the Constructors and the Drivers' Championship at the moment. On the driver's side, it's Lewis ahead of everyone by a mile. And on the Constructor side, it is Mercedes ahead of everybody else by a country mile. So, there you go. Those are your world champions in waiting at the moment. I mean, of course, mathematically, somebody else can still win both of these titles, although it's completely unrealistic at this point. I believe, they're going to win the confirm of being world champions on the Constructors this weekend when they score enough points. I'm not saying if, but when. I mean, it would really be the rarest of occasions if they do not score very many points, but I suppose things can happen. And we'll wait and see what happens indeed on Sunday afternoon at Imola. Anyways, that is it for the show this week. Thank you so very much for downloading and listening. Of course, as always, if you want to get in touch, best and quickest and easiest way is on the Twitters at ScuderiaF1Pod or email at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com. That's a wrap. Enjoy the race on Sunday. I'll be back afterwards to talk about it and wrap it up. Enjoy it. Have a great week. Enjoy your holiday weekend. Well, it's not really a holiday. It's Halloween. So enjoy Halloween, the trick-or-treating, whatever you're going to do. Keep safe. Be COVID smart. Take care of yourselves. And I'll talk to you again very, very soon. Bye for now. Ciao.
Thanks for listening to the Scuderia F1 podcast. If you want to get the show notes for this episode, then head over to ScuderiaF1Pod.com. Want to get in touch with us? Then email us at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com.